You're crazy if an idea doesn't become successful, and you're genius if it does. So it's literally what success is. Success is just that crazy idea that becomes something, you know.
Welcome to the Idea Generation Podcast, a show about creative entrepreneurship. My name is Noah Callahan Bever, and each week I'll be speaking with some of the most innovative ideators in culture and trying to figure out how they make their creative decisions. This podcast is brought to you by the good people at Shopify. Feeling that entrepreneurial itch? Turn your passion into a business with Shopify. They've got everything you need to start, run, or grow your business. Check out shopify.com/idea to learn more. Tarius Nash, better known as The Dream, moved from North Carolina to Atlanta with his mother when he was just 2 years old. As he grew up, he would take trumpet lessons, join the school band, and form a teenage singing group. The musical bug had him bit. But at the age of 18, Nash's mother would pass away, and he moved in with his grandfather, a cement mason. Nash saw firsthand the discipline and work ethic his grandfather possessed, and Nash carried that with him as he pursued his musical dreams.
My grandfather, who I spent a lot of time with, was a cement mason. And there's a lot of discipline to be learned in that space, and a lot of know-how, realistic approach to how things add up, a lot of knowledge and know-how, accountability, problem solving. But you can't build a great building or an amazing skyscraper when the foundation isn't right. So it's based in foundation and how the base of that thing is built from the beginning. So if your foundation is off, then you're off. It's hard to fail at being yourself when your foundation is strong. So I think I learned the biggest thing from my grandfather was foundational things, because that's how his job worked. That was his profession. He loved to do it. It's, you know, most of these buildings now that exist, of course, past his time, he's not with us anymore. But a lot of these buildings that were put up here in Atlanta, he worked on them, you know, including the airport here, which was a major thing back then. So to watch important things being done and to be able to stand beside something that's still standing meant a lot. So that goes into my idea of songwriting or in art, and it's transferable knowledge. How to write a great song, how to create a great piece of art that can become legend based on the foundational parts of it. What makes it make sense? You know, does the song make sense? Does the story make sense? You know, it's movies that I watch all the time, and the greatest of them are always the ones that make the most sense. I don't care whether it's a comedy or if it's Gladiator. You know, like it makes sense. It all adds up. You know, and that's what his thing was, making sure things all add up in the end. With my mother, more so like my best friend, who I lost when I was 15 to cancer, was her spirit was more of the ethic than her work habits. You know, like, of course, she maintained two jobs, one being a waitress at one place while being a waitress at another place, doing hair on the side. And the things that she taught and what I learned from her, which I don't feel like her existence was professional. It was as a mother. So I learned in the end that there's no replacing that particular responsibility. My best friend, who's still my best friend now, stayed right behind me, the house. He stayed on North Avenue, and I stayed on Baker Road here. And he started playing trumpet, and he's 3 years older than I am. I looked up to him, and he's known me since I was three. So for me, This guy got in the band. I want to get in the band. For him, it was just being a kid, and I was just being a, you know, a kid, but not really. There were certain musical things I was attracted to that weren't recognizable to my grandfather or to my mother, you know, because that's just how the house worked. There was a piano in the living room that was out of tune forever. And I remember my grandfather selling it around that same time, and I cried forever. He had no idea I was in love with this piano that sounded horrible. I remember trying to scratch my first record, which was a 12-inch by Salt-N-Pepa. It was Push It. And the album's, it was this burgundy album, and I'm in there like, oh, this is how the DJs do it. It's like, no, not with just one turntable, bro. Like, what are you doing? And of course, I was terrible at it at the time, but I was attracted to it. I wanted to know how that worked. I was drawn to it in a way, the same way I was drawn to my good friend with playing the trumpet in elementary school. And so from that particular point, that's where my musical education started. But as a teenager, I was in the singing group. Ultimately, I ended up getting kicked out of the group. Okay. Yeah, I wanted to practice too much. So it was like, get your ass out of the group. So at least that's how I recall it. at that particular time, everybody had a group. It was 90s, and people were out. Jodeci's out. Yep. Drew Hill's out. Like, hey, man, let's get together and do some dance moves and go in. You know, we won competitions and did certain things. I was super serious about winning, though. Especially with my mom passing, that kind of put me in a situation where I didn't have that time to waste. So it made me annoying, I'm sure, to everybody that was around me, because they're like, yo, we just practiced yesterday. I'm like, practice again. They're like, no, we're not practicing today. We're going to the mall. We're going to rock this new Tommy Hilfiger, and that's what we're going to do. And so for me, I just wanted to practice, and do certain things and get myself out of the circumstance that I could feel innately that was going to come. My grandfather's getting older. My mom has already passed. And I just wanted to be ready and try to not succumb to where I came from, which could have went completely left. I'm on the west side of Atlanta. It's not a fun place to live out your life at that particular point. I lost so many people. Most people don't have to weep till they're like 50 over their parents, you know? And so for somebody to be 15 in that space, that's a pressure button. That urgency and everything kicked in because I didn't want to see myself breathing one day and then the next day, you know, I'm not here.
We talk a lot about the importance of representation and the power of being able to see certain archetypes and that opening doors for our minds, right? Was there anyone around you in that sort of early formative time that opened your eyes to the possibilities of being a creative professionally?
I remember just watching in the city these great producers grow. Dallas Austin and Jermaine Dupri, you know, grow in the 90s in a certain type of way, doing a thing that I felt like I could do, right? And so for me, watching this greatness happening, it's like, oh, they're making a living doing this. And so for me, it's like, wait, you get paid that for doing that thing? It's like, oh shit, that's what I know how to do. It's like, let me do a lot of whatever that is. I can do that. You know, we're in the South. It's slowly happening. So even if it's one rap guy, you have to go all the way across the city to somebody somewhere else, where in New York, this is happening on every block. So this is a thing that's so spread out for me that there's nobody else to look to in that type of a way from a peer standpoint to even judge a thing against. You know, you're just looking at the radio, looking at The Box, which was a video program back then. And I came up with a formula maybe in my teens about writing songs that if it had no chance at being on Michael Jackson's album, then it's not a good song. That's what the bar was.
How old were you when you first had the moment of sort of cognition that you might have an extraordinary gift when it came to music?
I think it was pretty late to know that it was extraordinary. You know, by word, I didn't need to use any other tools to get out of where I was. It was a violent city at that time, you know, in my life growing up. Extraordinary was the last thing I was thinking about. You know, you're just trying to make it out. I didn't have to sell drugs. I didn't have to become violent, or I didn't have to take anything from anybody. It was a fortunate thing because there were good friends who were super good, had good hearts that were just kind of forced into that space, because everything isn't just a decision. Some things are decisions that your parents are making that kind of force that particular life, you know, on you when you don't think that there's another way to do a thing. You need luck, of course, to go your way, to be seen and to be heard. But yeah, that idea of extraordinary happened in that particular time period, mid-20s, where I knew that I can do something blindfolded. Like, and it wouldn't matter, and I'll be able to do it forever. It's not going to stop. It would just stop if I wanted it, you know, if I wanted it to. I feel like I'm innately doing exactly what I'm supposed to be doing.
Do you remember the feeling that you had the first time that you got paid to make music?
I actually don't remember the first time I got paid. When you're doing something that you're passionate about, you're actually not thinking about how much money you got paid. From working 9 to 5, going to the studio at probably 6, staying to 4 a.m., and then going back to work in traffic at 6 a.m., not sleeping, which is probably why I can't sleep now. It wasn't a form of payment in a transactional way like that. I think the transaction was I was able to do something that somebody asked me for, and they were happy with what I was doing. And it was somebody I respected from a musical standpoint.
The Dream realized that he had a gift, and he would do whatever it took to showcase it, even if it meant doing it for free or skipping a night's sleep. Soon, the hard work would pay off in the form of a meeting with famed record producer Tricky Stewart. So how did you end up meeting Tricky Stewart?
Trick actually is Lainey Stewart's brother, who I signed my first publishing deal with, which is one of those formulations that came down from the idea of Atlanta and how it works. And Atlanta's a small city. So everybody knows everybody. Everybody's being introduced to everybody. And at that particular time, which feels like ages now, a couple of friends, one Rob Hunter and Vaughn, were like, yo, you should go meet Trick. And Tricky was like, yeah, I mean, he cool, but he not all that. It was like, okay, cool. You know, me being the guy that takes criticism well. And we can kind of see how now that works out. So Lainey Stewart, who is his elder, me and him started a thing. And I got my first real placement, which was Everything on B2K. And then, of course, Tricky's working across the hall. Lainey's on one side. And me and Trick never really worked as much together until, like, later on in that close to Umbrella time period. Because I was with Lainey working on certain things at that particular time. So, but when we did, it was always something good.
How did you feel like your songwriting changed? You know, that was about a 5-year period from B2K to Umbrella and Baby and, you know, that sort of 07, 08 string of hits. How do you feel like you changed or matured in that moment?
Wow. Yeah, I'm like 30,000 times greater now. As much as imagination that I have, you can only write to your sight. You know, you only see what you can see. You have to see the world. You have to see it through the eyes of other people, perspectives, vantage points. Okay, I want to write a love song that's not going to sound like a love song. It's going to be Umbrella. And why does it have Umbrella in it? Because we all know what it is. I'm making the use of very regular things to explain something that could be unexplainable, which is actually love, which is what that song is about. In No Church, whereas I Live By You, Desire. I'm doing things that seem like they don't probably make as much sense when it comes to wit to just impact a certain idea and feeling immediately. If that was me earlier on I Live By You, I would say, you are or you're my desire, where I didn't feel the need to. It's like having like or but in a record. Like all of these things are maturing in songwriting where people are more intelligent than that. And I have to write better songs because of that. When I hear a like or but in a song, it kind of makes me mad. I'm like, why are you? Oh, you're trying to save space to create a melody. No, you need to find another fucking word. Throughout my life and over these past, you know, a couple decades of how I'm writing songs and getting the sense of what I need to say, even if you don't get it now. Now it's just a race to not outthink myself and just make it a game in my head and where it's like, they don't know what I said. And it's like, yeah, but also you didn't make any money. It's like, oh yeah, that's not cool at all. Don't be too fucking slick.
What was the role of salesmanship in being a songwriter?
I hate that part. I hate the over salesmanship. Like I'm not good at it. And because I don't want to be, I either want the shit to be amazing or I need to go fucking home. Like I'm gonna try to be as great of a friend as I could be. Greatest person that I can be to you, and I kind of want a mutual thing to go by, which plays itself back into music in the same way. I need to make the best shit for Beyonce, period. Now I have to write even better shit because we're that close. I'll write the best shit possible to leave nothing on the table where it's like, nah, this is the best one. It just so happens to be done by my good friend.
Do you think that that sort of led to a slower path to success for you?
Probably, absolutely, if we're basing success without knowledge. Because you learn so much shit at a slow pace, then you do, like, you go fast and say, oh, shit, I got 30 cars and I got $38 million. Then I don't have 30 cars and $38 million. And it's a year later. And it's like, what the fuck just happened? It's like, yeah, you probably should have got your 30 cars over 30 years. I've seen these things go both ways. And it's usually 98% of the times, the faster the shit come, the faster the shit go.
When you're getting started and you're starting to sell your first songs, hooks, all of these things, in your mind, are you going to be the dream solo artist superstar or the dream behind the scenes songwriter, producer?
I never thought of them as being things like that. They're all like just decisions that depended on whatever I was trying to accomplish. My artist thing just kind of took off. There was a point where I was like, well, I'm really great at songs and I don't have to do that. And then there came a point in 07 where I had to, because I understood that songwriters easily are forgotten. And I said, you know what they don't forget is if you make classic art involving yourself as an artist. I said, oh, cool. Let me make Love Hate then, because this is the only way they're not going to truly forget. Let me get on here and practice my craft. And that's what it was. There's a lot of people that came in and took a chance, you know, and to this day I'm grateful for. And one of them being Karen Kwok, of course. They worked at Def Jam. Call Karen. Karen, I want to be an artist. She said, okay, let's do it. I didn't even have a fucking album. My song was on the radio. I didn't even have a contract yet.
Really?
I hadn't signed nothing. Man, that's some handshake shit for you. Man, all right, well, record's going. Shawty is a 10 is up. There's no contract on Dream. There's no doubt in everybody else's mind, though, that I'm going to sign it. So, all right, well, cool. Let's get the shit done. Get the shit done. Go to Vegas, make the rest of the album. And voila. But I was still unknown. You have Rihanna, this Umbrella record is going. And happening at that same time, even before she got the record, there was a career of mine going on. Not to the height that it would become, but we don't know what that record is going to do one way or the other. And at the time, Ree was new to everybody. And I remember having that conversation with my team at that particular time. And certain people leaned in certain ways, and I was like, nah.
People didn't want you to give her that record?
Because there were other people wanted the record, and rightfully so. They were bigger at the time, and I took a swing with the young kid, and that was Ree. I was like, nah, I want it on her. It's a certain attitude, a certain thing, this one. Because if I do it on this, it looks like something. If I do it over here, it's just be like, well, of course. They're already fucking big, you know. If I could change this girl's life with this song, that means the song is what the song is. And so that's what was going on in my head. Somebody called me and was like, yo, man, Jay's at the 4040 Club playing Shawty's a 10. At this time, me and Jay don't have that type of relationship at all. Well, Umbrella as a thing, and I saw him later rap for the record, but not like he don't owe me shit. So like, yo, he's up here spinning your shit at 4040, like y'all cousins. Like, oh, that's what's up. Forever grateful for that moment.
Umbrella was an instant classic, racking up 3 Grammy nominations, including a win for Best Rap Song Collaboration. The Dream was now on everyone's radar, including Jay-Z, who brought him on his Heart of the City tour. From there, it was only a matter of time before Dream would end up working with Beyonce, writing her hit single, Single Ladies.
It was Timbaland and Stargate. And it was me and Tree. And so they were already in New York working on B. And at this particular time, I hadn't worked on B at all yet, period. But I'm on tour with Jay and Mary on the Heart of the City tour. I was opening up.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. So I'm on the road and Jay's like, yo, some for my wife. Like, okay, so what's up? Notably, he said wife, which I'm sorry, God, but maybe I know some shit that I shouldn't know. I don't know. So all of these things, of course, are playing into the idea of what song I'm probably going to write. And I remember walking in, rocking the mic. It's like, I don't know who think they got the single in here, but I'm about to get that single. I have no idea what I'm going to write at all. And Trick is doing this thing. He's doing the loop. I'm sitting on the sofa behind him watching. He's like, I think I'm going to another idea. Well, he gets ready to start another idea. I was like, yo, what are you doing? He's like, oh, you like that? I was like, I have the whole song. He's like, all right, cool. Trick knows at that point, if I say that, all right, I go right into the booth, loads up the track. 78% of that song done down in one take. Yeah, I just go back and fill in certain things here and there. And I knew what it was when Miss Tina came. Because the room went from being me, Trick, engineer, B Pop though, she listened. She's like, okay. Walked out, and then everybody started coming in. I said, yes, sir. Now we're hearing what we're supposed to be hearing. And that was a day off for me.
And then you were right back on tour.
Right back on tour.
Single Ladies was yet another global smash that brought home 3 Grammys, including Song of the Year. But instead of basking in it, The Dream understood the importance of keeping his momentum going and hit the road to get back on tour. At the same time, The Dream was growing unhappy with his label situation and started to look for new options. Have you ever had a big idea but lacked the tools to implement it? Look no further than Shopify. Shopify is the brand that powers all your favorite clothing, beauty, and sneaker brands and offers the best-in-class commerce tools to allow you to sell online, in person, and on all major social platforms. Shopify fuels millions of entrepreneurs and turns ambition into action. Check out shopify.com/idea to learn more. Now back to the story.
You put out several very successful records on Def Jam. And then at a certain point, you decided to go independent. What prompted that decision?
I need to do the 1977 project by myself to understand where the art of myself is. And all the times you don't need all the great players in the room at the same time, because somebody has to be the person that has an idea, and you gotta have support. There's too many chefs in the kitchen. And that's what was happening. And so for me, to follow me into that rabbit hole, I wouldn't trust anybody to do it. I actually like it better going into that darkness and trying to find out what's over there. So what I created was the deliverance to deliver myself out of the space where people felt like this is who Dream is. And if I gave you that again, I deliberately tried not to on purpose because I knew that you would only think that I'm this.
You've worked pretty extensively with both Beyonce and Rihanna. And both of them have put out records where you are contributing a number of songs and there's other songwriters, but the albums always feel very uniquely personal.
I think it's just our life experience is just period. The same way you talk to your friend, you know, I just do what I do as well as she does, you know, and having different perspectives and seeing stuff from a different lens. I read the same thing. I remember being there when she lost her grandmother. And there's a record on that album that starts, Mother Mary. And we talked, and I understood it. I know what that was already. I know what that pain is. I don't have to see you. There's no conversation I need to have. I know what that loss feels like immediately. And that was one of the songs that she loves. And that was just an idea of a song that you don't even have to talk about with me. I've already lived that. And I understand what it means to you, and the details will come from what it is about your life, because that's you. It happened to you. It's on your timeline.
With a record like, you know, Renaissance is almost like a concept album, and it's mm-hmm. it has its own totally unique sound, throwback to sort of 90s house.
Yep, but yep.
When you started working on those records, did you, like, was that the mandate? Was there like, oh, this is what we're doing this time?
Or, nah, man, let's do the best shit that we can do. I don't want nothing left behind. We don't care whatever it takes, let's try to make something great. If it involves 9 people, great. If it involves one, great. And by the way, you can't stall their time, especially when you're in a space where you're helping other people. This B record, one of the records on the album was wrote 5 years ago or today. And that's a great thing about songs. You pull a song from 10 years ago, Thick being one of them.
Thick?
Yeah.
How is 10 years old?
Probably to the date as we sit here.
So and it was just sitting on a drive somewhere?
It's never sitting on a drive. B is her own hard drive. She remembers things that I have no idea how she does it. I don't know how she remembers every step on stage, the same way I don't remember how she remembers every song that she records or starts to cut or even listens to. It could be a song she just, you think, oh, she heard that, and you know, you just go write another one. I'm not tripping. And she'll say, hey, send me the files for that record. Like, what record? I don't even know what she's talking about half the time. She has to remind me, and I'm like, oh, yeah, that one.
The Dream grew into a trusted friend and collaborator with Beyoncé. So when the COVID-19 pandemic hit and Beyoncé was looking for someone to record and engineer the Savage remix with Megan Thee Stallion, she once again turned to The Dream.
The Megan Thee Stallion record that her and B did, and we're in a pandemic. Nobody's at my house. It's me, the kids. Nobody there. Like, do you remember how to engineer? Of course I do. It's called Space Bar and 3, and that records. Turn the mic on, and which was probably one of my latest, proudest moments, which was, I recorded myself on the record that won a Grammy in the middle of a pandemic because I knew how to record myself.
And do you know a hit when you make Baby or Single Ladies?
I know that certain conversations in songs, because of songs, can be more widely accepted. It can turn into a coffee table conversation. I know what those are. So I know that talking about this particular thing, which is what 80% of people want to talk about, in my head is what a hit is, regardless of what Billboard says. You know, music is one of the most scrutinized, broken down places when it comes to that. And it doesn't mean that a thing isn't a hit. I'm just swinging for the fences anyway.
Itching to expand his creativity, The Dream enrolled in college for fashion at SCAD, the Savannah College of Art and Design.
So what prompted your decision to enroll in college and get into design?
I feel like fashion is the thing that you're just born into when you're in the hood, and you avoid so many things. You better have your dress code, regardless of whether you have the money for a new starter jacket or not. You got to put your shit together. Shit got to be together. You're under the scrutiny forever. If you care about it, of course. Most people don't care about it. No, you don't care about it. Nobody picks on you. When they know you care whether you got some Jordans or somebody else doesn't, we're like, bruh, like you got some kid size Jordans on. Like I see your toe prints, and you're like, shit. You don't think of it as it's a profession when it comes down to designing clothes. You're just doing that shit automatically, the same way you're doing songs and being in the church choir automatically. We know how to sew. We sew shit, patch shit. We did all the shit, but we didn't think of it as this is a thing you can get into and become completely successful at beyond your wildest, you know, dreams. So to have music already in a space where, yeah, you ain't really got to go to college to do that shit. I kind of felt like I owed it to myself. I needed to know that, hey, man, you're still as serious as you used to be. There's no other way to prove it than to say, all right, we're going to see if you're going to put yourself in college for fucking 4 years. If you do that, then that means you're serious. Thing happens with B now. It's like, cool, well, we're here doing music. And she'll say, hey, Dream, come over here and look at, let me know what you think about these particular things. She knows as well as I know, like, hey, this is how we grew up. This is what we do. It's like, it's another outlet for art, you know, that you get to do. Simultaneously making Renaissance and actually was in class at the same time while this whole thing is going on, which is another one of those proudful moments. It's not like a coloring book and go to class and then they're going to get, those professors do not play around. They would tell you to get out of their room. It's like, you shouldn't be here.
Do you plan to use all of this once
Absolutely.
You get out?
I've implemented it already. Like, there's certain things that I probably didn't know the terminology for. And but everything breaks down to whether you like something or not, and whether you know what something good is.
You mentioned, you know, having input behind the scenes on all kinds of random things that creatives around you are involved in. I understand that you were very instrumental in sort of helping Pusher with Daytona. Can you tell me a little bit about, like, what your role was in that?
That's so crazy, because I'm sure I don't appear on Daytona. Daytona ends up being one of those things where I'm like, this feels exactly how I want to feel. Oh, this is it. And I don't mind being the person that's, all you need to do for this, and that's my friend, like, that's my brother, mm-hmm. to listen. I'm not here to make money on this. Like, he wants me to listen. Cool, let me listen to one of my greatest friends rap and see if he nailed it. And knowing, I can say, nah, that's not it, which is the best liberty to have with all of them. You know, most people, if you don't write on something, they're never gonna hear it till it comes out. And all of these things I hear, like, all of the time. And no, not to jump into some shit that's already going. Like, no, that's magic. Who's doing that? Oh, let them keep doing what they're doing. Like, it's no point. Unless you really, really need me to do something. Right now, though, you're on a roll. It sounds cohesive. I'm not scared to know that I don't have to participate in order to participate. Sometimes people just want you to listen, to be around, to just bring a good vibe, and not be the guy where you're like, well, I ain't playing on the team, so I don't want nobody to win. It's like, oh, that's like 98% of the industry. You know, nobody needs that extra person. So for me to be dynamic at a thing that I do, and to also be able to show up in that capacity, that's back again, that makes me feel good.
As The Dream looks to the future, he continues to work on his company, Radio Killer, support a wide variety of musical friends, and contribute to the arts through any medium he can.
Your company is called Radio Killer. And it makes me think, you know, in the time that you've been active as a songwriter and as a producer, the world has changed dramatically. And formats and the way that music is monetized and the role of radio in people's lives, all these things have shifted over the last 20 years, you know, from trying to make a transactional sale of a physical plastic disc right. to now long tail consumption, right? Do those changes affect how you think about making songs?
In a way, they can't. I feel like if you didn't start a thing for instant success, they shouldn't, right? So it's like, I feel like the same song now would belong still in a group and in a space with everybody in every piece of work that I've done from this particular point in time to 2007. Like, they all belong together. So I can't do it. It's there to not even jump at the idea that, hey, man, I could do this thing if, or somebody calls me and says, yo, Falsetto is going crazy on TikTok. I care and I don't care that it is. Like, because the greatest thing about it is going crazy on TikTok. I had nothing to do with it. It's all the fans and TikTok is great for that thing. What's going to keep it actually great is not going in now to mess with the ecosystem of what people want to do with your records. Like, whether TikTok would know that or not, I wouldn't know. But no, don't jump in and let them. They're doing their thing because I made something great at that particular point in time, and continue to do that because platforms, regardless of what they are, in order to exist, still have to have the greatest content on them regardless. But at the top of it, that holds it together is great content. It has to be that way. It's great content. And that's the thing that pushes these platforms versus, oh, we just get a lot of people on here. You know, you get a lot of people with a lot of trash, then you end up with a lot of trash. It's held together, though, by things that people believe in.
Does it feel raw constantly to be that tapped in with other people around you?
Oh, man. It's a slash between, like, this is a job of psychology and wisdom and it's a bunch of things that happen in my space and in my mind that irritate the shit out of me. Like, it's like it's irritating. It's so lovely, it's irritating. It's like this is hard to wake up to every day constantly. And it's harder for me to even let things go based on my connection in that space.
No, I mean, I think about like interviews with people like Marlon Brando or you know, Robert De Niro, and they talk about the having to detransition out of
characters
mm-hmm. and how that's a process that could take weeks or months. I would imagine songwriting is no different than inhabiting your...
It's no different than writing films. It's literally, like, no difference.
It lives within you 24/7.
Oh, yeah. It's amazingly horrible. In the best way possible.
Do you have a single record that you're most proud of?
Not yet. I think I've made records with my friends and people that I love that are great for... culturally moving things forward. My best thing that I'm most proud of, I'll know it when I'm able to give 100% of a thing in a song that's unrelated to the idea of what the idea of success is as it means in mainstream. That's when I'll know. And it's probably going to come in the form of music and film in some type of way. I don't think that can be done in a 3-minute and 30-second cycle. The hardest job to do to me and the most strenuous is to try to make a story make sense in 3 minutes and 30 seconds. You give me an hour and a half to make a story make sense. Oh, please.
Do you have a set of goals, or do these ideas just sort of keep presenting themselves and keep pushing you forward?
I think my goal... to be amongst all the things that I love. I love film. I love clothing. I love car. Music. And you're at a certain... I'm at a height and has been at a height in a certain space of one of those. And so it's like, no, because I want to make sure I leave the tank empty.
My father used to make computer games. He's now 68. And like probably about 10 years ago, we're like having a birthday celebration. And I'm like, oh, what's up, Dad? He starts thinking about it in terms of, well, I have a finite amount of time to keep creating. And I feel like I can get maybe 3 more projects done. And for me, that was, I mean, one, sobering, just because mortality is sobering. But also, as a creative person, I had never, I mean, I think about it as it just keeps going.
Right.
But... you're 45, I'm 43. We're now in a place in our career where, all right, we've seen 20 years of this. Mm-hmm. Are there boxes now that you're checking off that you need to get done before this is all over? You said you want the tank to be empty.
Yeah.
So it's film, clothes, cars.
Yeah, it's everything. You don't know what boxes you have because you only can do what you have an opportunity to do. So... these become boxes because you have the opportunity to do them. Just depends on opportunities and who you know, what they're doing.
You mentioned knowing a level of quality and success because you've achieved that in music. Mm-hmm. Does it fundamentally matter as you try these other disciplines if you're able to achieve that level of success? Is it about... just doing it, or is it about doing it?
No, it's about doing the greatest thing that you can do, period. Like, I wouldn't try to do a film if I didn't feel like I can make something that will last forever.
The dream story is one of selflessness. From his early days skipping sleep to get placements, to helping Pusha T sort out the arrangements on Daytona, for which he was uncredited, the Dream's ability to put ego aside and help create the best art possible has been fundamental to his success. From an early age, he fell in love with the process, and that passion for the art is what makes him one of the most celebrated collaborators of his generation. Add a decorated solo career on top of that, and new explorations in fashion and art, and it's safe to say that the Dream is nowhere near the end of his career. In fact, he's just getting started. Big thanks to our sponsors at Shopify. If you're looking to start your own online store, check out shopify.com/ideas and become your own boss today.